on today's show.
So when you look into really where Pentecostalism has grown, and especially Neo-Pentecostalism, it has grown most rapidly where shamanism is popular.
Right.
And so like in my background, in Cusco, Peru, there was shamanism is huge. In fact, people go there to be trained in shamanism. The overlay or the intersection between shamanism and Neo-Pentecostalism is just wildly alarming. Really, what you're doing is you're replacing the shaman with the Neo-Pentecostal pastor.
Mm.
You know, say prayers like this, do these certain things, and the demons will... Yeah, he'll go away.
He's like different name and face, but it's still the idea of that village holy man.
That's right.
Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE. Joined by Scott Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California, and joined in the studio, putting these digs to good use by my new friend and fellow churchman, fellow ABWE home staff worker, Dr. Trevor Holloway, newly minted from Midwestern Seminary.
Yeah, shout out to Midwestern.
Shout out to our friends at Midwestern. We love them. They've been sponsors on the show as well. We're thankful for them. Also, somewhat fresh off the mission field.
A few months.
Give us the 30-second version, friend.
Of my time on the mission field? So Well, I spent 8 years in Cusco, Peru, training pastors and leaders there, Quechua primarily, who had no access to theological preparation. And by God's grace, by the time I left, I had passed on my entire ministry of a Bible Institute to guys that I had trained up to take over.
Wow. So, that's the way to do
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm.
That's the way to do it. Now you're here helping mobilize new missionaries. So you're director of mobilization right now. And boy, we need more workers for the harvest.
Yeah, there's always a need. I mean, you throw a dart at the world, including North America, and there's great need for workers in the harvest.
Okay, wait a second. You said throw a dart at the world, but just the 1040 window needs it, though. Even North America, what are you talking about, man?
Yeah, like, well, I know.
We got to focus on the unreached.
That we do. Yeah, that's
true.
We do.
That's a popular, I'll stir up some controversy for you already here.
We don't do that on the show ever.
It's
a great way to raise a lot of money. There are other places in the world that need missiological help. And in fact, even just focusing on the 1040 window, reshifting everybody's focus there has left the global South in some hurt in terms of the strength and the biblical health of the church there. So we need missionaries everywhere. Of course, we need missionaries in the 1040 window, but there's a lot of work to be done all over the world.
So let's pick that apart, because we've gone over this on the show before, but we always have to reset this issue. So depending the corner of the church world you occupy, maybe you're looking at it and you're saying, like, I don't hear people around me talking about the unreached. What do you mean we're focusing too much on the unreached? Like that's unheard of, that we're focusing too much on the unreached. But from a front lines missionary perspective, serving with a major agency, being with another larger missions agency now, you're looking at it and you can see the timeline from the 70s when the concept of hidden peoples was first introduced all the way through to the present. You can see the pendulum shift. And at one point, the pendulum was swinging so far to the one side that agencies were pulling missionaries out of parts of Africa, parts of Latin America, which we'll talk about in a minute, pulling personnel out of those places to put them into pioneering contexts. And from your perspective, you would say that was a great move, or you would say actually they left a lot of unfinished work?
Yeah, I would say they left a lot of unfinished work. I think that the intention behind it was good, right? Of course, we want to reach the unreached and we want to plant churches where there is no church. However, when those missionaries got pulled out of the existing works, what they've left behind is a lot of unhealth. So when you and you left kind of a vacuum for heresy, aberrant theologies, that have really taken root. So I know we'll get into Latin America in a little bit, but even when we just look at the global South as a whole, there's a lot of celebration that, hey, Christianity is really taking root in the global South. There's more Christians in the global South than in the global North. And that is widely celebrated by some missiologists and sociologists. But when you start to get, when you look under the hood of what is being called Christianity, it's a scary thing. And so I think that is a result of, again, well-meaning agencies pulling folks out of existing works and leaving something that wasn't quite right or finished. And now, because we're playing a numbers game when we do that, right? So maybe using arbitrary percentages to say a place is reached instead of asking the question, are the churches in this region biblically healthy, and are they biblically healthy enough to then plant other biblical healthy churches in the region?
So, you're getting invited to speak at all the missions conferences clearly with this message.
Yes, I'm number one on the list. Yeah, yeah,
like all the big ones that I'm not going to name right now.
That but, never talk about unreached peoples.
Right. And when you're saying there's unhealth in these churches, I mean, we're talking what? We're talking heresy. We're talking prosperity. What does that look like? Yeah.
So by and large, you're gonna find a couple things, right? So when we're looking at the global South, the global South is highly Pentecostalized, right?
And global South, just defining terms, just make sure our listeners are following. So like majority world, non-Western, would
be, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're gonna find it highly Pentecostalized and mostly going to be neo-Pentecostal. So when we think of Pentecostals, like, we might think of kind of traditional classic Pentecostalism of Church of God, Assemblies of God, where there's going to be, we would have some differences theologically, of course, over some of the ways they use gifts and understand gifts and that type of thing. But we would probably say they have the gospel. But what you're finding more and more is just the rapid growth of neo-Pentecostalism, which really takes like the holiness movement out of Pentecostalism and replaces it primarily with prosperity theology. And then also things like, they won't call them amulets, but they are, right? So you'll see, I mean, you can turn on certain Christian, quote unquote, Christian television, and they'll be selling this blanket, right? This blanket that Alex Kochman blessed. And you can buy it.
I think we're giving those away for our premium subscribers, actually. Right, shout out premium subscribers, missionspodcast.com.
That mug.
That mug, Alex. Where's my mug? Continue.
So, you know, that's where you'll see like the water that's been blessed that if you just give this seed offering, right, it's going to heal your diseases or things like that. So
it's shamanistic.
Really. It is shamanistic. Yeah. So when you look into really where Pentecostalism has grown, and especially neo-Pentecostalism, it has grown most rapidly where shamanism is popular.
Right.
And so like in my background, in Cusco, Peru, there was shamanism is huge. In fact, people go there to be trained in shamanism, right? And we have people from all over the world coming for certain shamanistic rituals like ayahuasca, where they're taking hallucinogens from the jungle. And the overlay or the intersection between shamanism and neo-Pentecostalism is just wildly alarming. Really what you're doing is you're replacing the shaman with the neo-Pentecostal pastor. You know, say prayers like this, do these certain things. And the demons will go away.
He's like different name and face, but it's still the idea of that village holy man.
That's right.
That's blessing your life. That's helping you. Now, Scott, I want to kick it to you. There's a lot that we could dig into here. And for regular listeners, none of this is new to you. We've talked about all these things before. But Scott, why is it such an uphill climb for someone in a mobilization position like Trevor is, to convince people that we still need people in these reached places? So the importance of unreached is clear, right? Obviously, if people have never been exposed to the gospel, there needs to be a strategy to reach them. No one's denying that at all. But why is the idea of some kind of a balance between the two? Why is that such a hard sell for so many people you know, for you and your experience in mobilization, I'm curious how you'd approach that.
That's a great question. And, you know, we were doing a little bit of joking and I don't want our listeners to be confused. I mean, there are real reasons why there was an emphasis put on unreached people groups. If you look at dollars spent amongst unreached, number of missionaries going to unreached. I mean, now there's factors that lead to that. It's not just as simple as if only we would send more missionaries there, they would all be arrested and killed. I mean, there's certainly parts of the world where we're not, we still send them, but we send them in small numbers, not like we would do, you know, in a mass mobilization effort. So yes, of course, we still want that. But I kind of wonder if, okay, this is going to sound terrible, but if like the people calling the shots on some of those strategies are not people who've actually been on the ground in mission situations or have not been ground and broadly. And I recognize, you know, some head honcho of some big organization is going to listen to this and go, what does Dunford know about anything? And he's probably right. I've heard those stories too. And I worked amongst an unreached people group. But we wrestled with this when I became a pastor and we had a church and I was pushing toward unreached people groups. And thankfully I had some really wise people in my mission committee that were like, well, why, you know, let's not forget about our missionaries in South America. And it caused me to have to think deeply about, okay, how do I reconcile these legacy ministries where we have an ongoing responsibility to finish the tasks we started out to do while also pushing the boundaries on some of these new places where we haven't had gospel impact in millennia or centuries. How do we balance those mm-hmm. out? And I think that's where it's important for a mission agency. I think like this is where ABWE is particularly in a sweet spot in that we've been doing unreached people groups since our inception, but also have a huge amount of legacy as we're getting close to 100 years of anniversary where, hey, we've got fields that have successfully transitioned over to national leadership, but also fields that aren't quite ready. I just was talking to a missionary not that long ago from Central African Republic and sharing the heartache of the pastors there going, we had missionary support and then they all left. And we're not ready because we need more help with training. We need more help with resourcing. We need more help with all these things. Because look at all these pastors who are falling into exactly what you described in South America. We had Conrad Mbewe talking about this a few years ago with us on the show. In Africa, it's the same situation, just African tribal religion versus South American shamanism. But it ends up being very similar looking. And if we don't finish the job well, we're going to leave a chaotic mess behind. So I think there's a lot that goes into it, Alex. I don't think it's a simple solution, but I think smart, wise, pastoral, missionary, theological, missiological, ecclesiological minds have to come together and go like, there's got to be a good way to raise up leaders, transition out wisely, and not just create a mess where we were.
And so, Trevor, what I want to do then is maybe ask you, you're in a mobilizing role. You're thinking about, okay, what are the global needs?
Right.
And what types of workers do we have to send? So what does it look like to finish the task in those places? You know, what does the North American church really have to offer in those settings where you're seeing heresy, you're seeing prosperity theology, you're seeing all of that slip in? Do we offer material support? Do we need people doing just the traditional pioneer evangelism, church planting type thing? Or do they have to be doing something different altogether? What does that look like to you?
Yeah, so I think of a few things and building off a little bit about what Scott said, and even the idea of like finishing the task in a certain place. I'm not sure that it's really finished because ultimately, even when the church is biblically healthy in a quote unquote reached area,
you're not done.
That's not done, right? You want that biblical church, that biblically healthy church, to then be sending missionaries to places that are unreached. And for example, you know, maybe somebody from Latin America may be better received in the 1040 window than guys that look like us.
And that's not a maybe. I mean, that happens. They're sending missionaries to the Middle East.
That's right.
Africa.
And Brazil is probably most known for sending missionaries. So the task is still going to be able to get them to a place where they're sending really strong, theologically solid missionaries. Now, to get to the other question, to get to that point, because that's a ways down the road, what does it look like? So, you know, in a lot of these areas that maybe a majority of the pioneering work is done, we could say.
Yeah.
What we really probably need is when we look at the New Testament, we see Paul, who Paul's kind of a jack of all trades, but primarily a pioneer, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Acts 15, he says that it's his ambition.
Yeah, Romans 15.
Romans 15. It's his ambition to go and plant churches where... Right. Where Christ has not been named.
And he says from Jerusalem to Illyricum, he's done. So like that task is finished, but this
finished the mission.
Task.
Yeah.
It's the initial task of the apostolic pioneering.
And even that in Romans 15, he says that it's his ambition.
Right.
So he's not saying that it ought to be the ambition of every missionary.
Right.
And we see too, like then he starts utilizing apostolic representatives. Right. So we think of there's dozens of them named, but we think primarily of like Timothy and Titus, who he writes. We can get into this if you want, but what I would call missionary epistles to Timothy and Titus. Mm-hmm. Right. So we typically call them pastoral epistles, but Timothy and Titus are never called pastors in the New Testament. Now they get sent to places. And they're there longer than maybe Paul was, but they're there for a specific task, right? Timothy goes to Ephesus to refute false teachers, right? Titus goes to Crete to set things in order. So they're there as kind of apostolic representatives of Paul to get things in order and to make sure the churches are healthy, right? But they're there for a specific task. And so... really, those letters are written to missionaries who have a specific task as apostolic representatives. But if we want to follow that model, we look at what they're doing, right? And I think this is what Scott referred to as like legacy fields, what we need there is guys like Timothy and Titus who can go and kind of strengthen the church that's there. So help them identify false teaching, false doctrine, false teachers. Teach them sound doctrine. More than that, like Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:2, teach that church to teach sound doctrine, but also to teach others, right? So it's raising up leaders who not only understand sound doctrine, but they can also train the next generation to teach sound doctrine. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to go about it. I think one of the major things that's lacking, for example, in Latin America or in much of the global South, the majority world, where the church is struggling so much, is theologians being raised up, right? So from those contexts. And why is it so difficult to raise up theologians from those contexts? Well, there's a scarcity of theological resources available in those contexts. Now, a lot of what they have is coming from the West and it's translated, which, trust me, I'm very thankful for.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great material, but it's not...
Something is better than nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. But what would be ideal, obviously, is to have, for example, in Latin America, just a swell of Latin American theologians who are reflecting on what's happening in Latin America and writing solid theological treatises for the populace in Latin America. And that would be accessible to everyday believers and including guys who are out in the jungle or out in the mountains. You know, right now, one of the struggles is a lot of the guys that I worked with live, you know, Cusco, where I lived, is 11,000 feet. Right. These guys live out in the mountains in the middle of nowhere. For them to get a theological resource, one, they have to travel a great distance to get it. Two, it's really expensive. I'm talking like a month's wages for them.
Wow.
Right. So if again,
for what? For a book?
For a book. Now, for that book to be then also written at the level that they could. Read it is a different. So there are huge, huge issues that need to be solved that take time. And so that's where my bent is. Absolutely, we need to reach the 1040 window, but there's a lot of work to be done to help these other fields get to where they have healthy churches, trained leaders, and really their own theologians who are contributing to the larger global theological discussion.
And you're kind of answering one of the objections that comes up. One of the objections that comes up is, well, the goal is that they should self-theologize. But you don't get there through good intentions. You only become able to self-theologize. You know, look at any great painter, even the ones that broke the rules, like Dali, okay, were classically trained in older methods and styles. You have to learn the rules to break them. Maybe a bad analogy, because I don't think we want anyone breaking theological rules.
Right.
But the point being is you have to know the grammar. You have to be familiar with the dialectic before you can go on and you can start producing your own theologies for your context. You have to learn the tools, the building blocks. So what you're saying is not come in and impose and just, you know, hand them fish, but teach them to fish, which does mean correcting unsound doctrine, teaching sound doctrine, calling out heresy where you've seen it. Am I tracking with you on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And really, we need to take the role more as a partner, right? Mm. And that's how we ought to view ourselves, is as partners with these national brothers who are hungry to learn, eager to learn, but haven't had access to it, haven't had the opportunity. We need not just, we do need traditional seminaries. You know, they may not look like a Western seminary might, but we need traditional seminaries because that's where like theologians come from, right? But then we also need non-formal Bible institutes that are going to be able to train the masses, because really in the global South as a whole, the average Christian is poor and uneducated, right? Yeah. And so we need to be really focusing on both and, right?
Yeah. Scott, let me kick it to you for any comments that you want to make, but also I just wonder if, you know, how do we get this back? How do we start sending missionaries to do the type of work that Trevor's describing? I just wonder if part of it is we have to repent of this idolatry of the aesthetic of missions. Should we be doing pioneer missions? Of course, but the idea that, like, well, I only want to support somebody who's in the Sahara. You know, I only want to support somebody who's in the 1040 window. And is there an idolatry happening to where, it, you know what, that's fine. And God bless the people that are doing that. But maybe you, maybe your church need to be content supporting somebody who's in a place like Peru, that it might not be making as big a splash. It might not produce the most dramatic testimonies and stories, but it's a needed work. Maybe there's just a little bit of humility that we need to have on our end. I wonder, but I want to hear your thoughts.
I mean, obviously everything's complicated. You know, I don't want to act like my gut response is it's more complicated than that. But of course, you know that. Yeah, I think you do have. I think it's just about more broadly educating ourselves and our ministries about the varying tasks of missions, right? Mm-hmm. Because I've been in churches where, you know, all of our missionaries were in these legacy fields, as I call them, you know, where, you know, we didn't have anyone working in unreached people groups. And, and so I think it was a needed correction in our ministry to go, if we don't try to find someone who's working among unreached people group among some of the least reached peoples, like our church isn't going to learn anything about that. And so we went out and tried to find some really good, and I was looking for people who could teach and explain it well, not just people who are doing a good job, because I wanted our people to be well equipped with that. So I think it, you know, but I also think there's ministries that they're starting from scratch. They only are doing unreached people groups. And then that's where it's coming into frustrations for Trevor and people like him of going like, but what about this? And kind of overreactions if we just are hearing, you know, like a David Platt at a big conference, you know, talking about the least reached peoples, and we're not hearing anything about the other side of it. And that's one of the things, I know I'm sounding like a commercial for ABWE, but that's one of the things I've loved about ABWE is that I think that ABW is a good example of understanding. And this is how I would try to explain it back to your original question that I did not answer, Alex, the first time you asked me as a mobilizer. I was trying to help people to make the connections. Like, there's more than one way to reach unreached people groups. One way is for me to send Alex to that place. Yeah. Another way is for me to equip Alex as he's working, or instead, let's just pick Trevor then, because he actually was doing it, to support Trevor in Peru, who's raising up national leaders. And actually, we do have Peruvian missionaries. I don't know about among the Quechua people, but maybe it's the Quechua tribe going to a neighboring tribe, which is happening all over South America. Or maybe it's the Peruvians in Lima who are creating their own mission organizations, which is happening, that are sending missionaries to the unreached peoples. Like, we're doing, multiplication is always a better than addition. And I think that's something that we have to keep thinking about in the area of global missions, is how do we what's the multiplying effect that we can have by raising up whole nations and people groups to engage in the Great Commission, rather than just saying this is a North American task, or this is a developed world task, this is a Christendom task. Yeah. How do we raise it so everyone gets to be part of what God's doing in bringing all things to his determined end?
And on that note, Scott, I think a piece of this, and Trevor, I want to hear your thoughts on this too. I think a small piece of it is, honestly, our eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's so many different directions that you can take that, but let's just take it in the broadest possible brush strokes. If you really believe that God intended for us to think that basically everything's going to hell in a handbasket, well, then really all you can do is just reach and get this baseline minimum Christian presence in each of these people groups.
Right.
Right. Like, well, we got that 1-2% on to the next, right? Because things are that bad. And again, that's part of the task, is reaching them. But then also beyond that, the goal is discipling the nations. The goal is entire nations having thriving Christian movements that are exerting influence, that are salt and light, and that are multiplying and sending to other nations. So the glory of the Lord is filling the world through the gospel being proclaimed, right? That's something that doesn't happen if you just pull out right away. Right. So in the few minutes that we have left, speak to your heart for mobilization, your heart to see more workers for reached and unreached contexts. And this is critical. Again, this is not the ABWE infomercial show, but people should also know that, you know, if somebody wants to serve long-term with ABWE, they're going to pick up the phone and they're going to be talking to you essentially at some point soon in that process. So what does that look
like? No pressure.
And what are the types of laborers for the harvest that you're longing for and praying to see?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think of a few things. One, first and foremost, their character, right? Do they have a godly character that others would attest to? Because when you're on the field, your character is going to be tested in ways that just are surprising to you. Secondly, you know, their ambition. You know, we mentioned from Romans 15, Paul's ambition, right? We can look at 1 Timothy and Titus. Now, these are qualifications for elders, but if someone desires to be an overseer, that's a good thing. That's a good desire. So do they have a desire? And what is that desire? What is their gifting like? I think about like Timothy. Timothy had an active ministry when Paul came along and recruited him. It's interesting too, when we look at all the leaders that Paul developed, we don't get a lot of detail in how he developed them, but they were active in their ministry, the ones that we know about and we have a little detail on.
Like, he wasn't just spotting people with potential.
Right. And then he was recruiting them.
Yeah.
And so that would be a word to like pastors and missions boards and churches. Actively look at your congregation and look for those people, not the people who you want to send out because you would be glad they're gone, but people who would be a real blessing to the nations. And then work with them to develop them, identify some of their weak spots. And, you know, I would say this too, you know, within ABWE, I think one of the strengths that we have is working with local churches to help develop those who they want to send. And so for me, when the types of people I would love to see go to the field are people who are mature and fruitful in their local church. Mm-hmm. Mm. So that when they step onto the field, they're going to step in a whole new context, face a whole new set of issues, but they have some ministry experience and some life experience and maturity behind them. Yeah. And that's going to take them to a whole new level. The mission field is a really difficult place. And the learning curve is steep if that's where you're cutting your teeth in ministry for the first time.
Yeah, boy. And you were at our church a few weeks ago when we sent off one of our own to a new pastoral position. That's hard. Right. You want to hold on to your own.
You really do.
Especially your best.
It's really hard.
but it really is an act of faith, right? Yeah. And I don't know that you could go to one church that would say they don't want to be an Acts 13 church, right? An Antioch-style church.
In principle.
In principle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But when the rubber meets the road, that's hard to give up your best people and trust that the Lord is going to refill that.
Yeah.
But he does. That's the beauty of it. Your church, when you were first sent, I'm sure did.
Yeah. I was one of the pastors in our church. Yeah. They found people way better than us, which isn't hard, but
no,
like,
it's super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
But that's it. It excites the church when that happens too, you know? And I would just say this too, you know, this is something that Scott brought up. You know, looking at a church maybe that doesn't have any focus on the unreached, or when you have a blend of people in the legacy field and people working among unreached, I would really just urge churches, don't compare the two. Because
that's good.
Yeah. I was able to do things in Peru much faster than I would have been able to do them in an unreached place.
Yeah.
The work in an unreached place is a slow...
Because the soil's already been tilled.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is a slow, plodding, very difficult place to work. And the updates that somebody gets through in their email may not be as flashy as something that I'm able to do with guys who are leading ministries who lack deeper discipleship and theological education.
Yeah.
But I already have some of the groundwork. That
you're seeing 50 salvations every month in North Africa, it wouldn't be unreached, right? That's why it's unreached, because there's not Christians there. It's hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like as church members, we read these different updates and we start comparing the two, and we got to be really careful not to do that.
Such a good word. We could keep going for a long time, but what I would rather do is just encourage, and we're up on a hard time stop here. I do want to encourage listeners to get a hold of you.
Yeah.
Because they can do that. Or if you're comfortable either sharing just the general email or your personal contact info, that's why you're here, to help people take a next step.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So if you're interested in learning more about ABWE or your calling, maybe assessing your call, so you can get in touch with me at trevor.holloway@abwe.org or mobilization@abwe.org. And then we have coming up in June.
Yeah.
We have our June demo.
Our next demo.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's a great place to come out to the international headquarters. And it's all about helping you assess your call and find your role in the Great Commission.
Yeah. No high pressure sales tactics.
No.
Yeah.
And it's a good deal. You get stay in a hotel, get some great food,
you know.
Life of comfort and ease, collect a few seashells along the way.
Yeah. Just to make John Piper happy.
And you can meet Trevor, which is the best part of it.
Well, I don't know. You might regret that.
There's a lot of other really good people
who will be there.
Yeah. Can you sign my dissertation?
Yeah. If they bring their dissertation to you bound, would you sign it?
I would sign it and waive their fee for demo.
Wow.
How's that?
Wow. You are benevolent.
Oh, yeah.
That's a deal. That's a better deal than our bonus episodes, Alex. We got to up our game.
I don't know if I'd go that far. Why don't we just say both are great deals? Come to the demo event. Also, become a premium subscriber for the Missions Podcast. Mm-hmm. And we want you to take a next step. Or even if that's not where you're at in life right now, just pray with us that the Lord would bless your efforts. Absolutely. Raise up more laborers for the harvest, Matthew 9:38. Thank you for joining us on the Missions Podcast today. And we'll include all those links in the show notes. Can people read your dissertation online? Can we include a link to that
as
well?
It'll be uploaded in the ProQuest presently.
Presently. So, all right. So coming soon.
Yeah, coming soon.
Coming soon to a ProQuest near you.
And if you want to get a good nap, you can upload it and read it.
That's the thing. So thank you for joining us. The Missions Podcast is a ministry of ABWE. To learn more, go to abwe.org. To get more content, go to missionspodcast.com. You can hit the premium tab and get access to the bonus episodes that we record right after the main show. And so if you want to get more of conversations like this, go ahead and join our team. That helps us do more to mobilize workers for the harvest and get solid content out to equip people in their walk. If you have a question, email alex@missionspodcast.com or a suggestion for a future topic. We'd love to hear from you. And by the way, before you go, just do us this favor. Please leave us a positive rating and review in your favorite podcast platform. That really does help other people discover the show. Well, until next week, go make disciples of all nations. We'll see you then.